If I would have left it the way it was, it still would have been a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. So it really wouldn't have been that many bedrooms. And now instead it's a 3-1 and a 2-1. So in that way, it basically is double the rent.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Liz Faircloth.
And this is Andressa Gadali.
We are the hosts of the Real Estate Invest Her Show. So many deals in today's market are not making financial sense. They are not penciling out. Have you ever considered converting your property into something that does make sense? Well, on today's show, we have Dina Loggin. She's a real estate investor who's going to break down for us how she converted her single family home to a multifamily.
She was able to scale her business up to 16 units, all owned on her own. And in today's episode, we're going to break down from A to Z, step by step, how she was able to convert a single family property into a duplex and make the deal work.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED lights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
So, Dina, you have built a very successful business. You were able to scale to 16 units that you own on your own. And today we're going to start talking about a single one that you converted into a multifamily. Nowadays, it's hard to find a deal that pencils out. And I think this is a tool that every woman should have on their toolbox, the ability to analyze a deal and see the potential for a conversion. So let's dissect that. How did you find this property?
I actually was just out with my family in St. Paul. I live in the Twin Cities, and we happened by an open house.
That was it? You were like going to a coffee and just like, whoa, hold on a second.
Yeah,
you sound like all of us, right? So talk to me. You saw the property and what did you do to evaluate the potential of converting that property to a multifamily? Was that your first thought when you saw it?
No, it wasn't. At first, I just went in to just look at the house as a single family. But in this neighborhood at this time, it was just way too big for a single family. So I was starting to write it off and it was extremely rough. But then the realtor had found that there was a gas line upstairs. And so then I started thinking about, okay, then that could be a kitchen. So now I started thinking a different way.
Then what was your next step after that? Because we all have those ideas, right? We have these, how do we, you know, get the most out of this property, this deal? Did you talk to the city? Like what were some of those kind of like next steps so you can kind of evaluate, is this going to be even a potential?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I called the city of St. Paul, their planning and zoning department, and started to talk to them about what that process would look like. I wanted to know how long it would take and how much it would cost. And just kind of if that was something they wanted to see in their city, you know, that's a big thing, is knowing what do they want.
That's a very good, important, you know, approach, because many times we put a lot of time and money and effort into thinking about it, but not understanding what the city wants and where the progress is. Many people say, well, that's like a freaking hurdle to go to the city. And then how about if they say no? How about if the community says no? How was your experience?
So this is the second time I've dealt with the city's planning and zoning. And I agree. I think the first time I was going to call, I was really intimidated. And I have found people in planning and zoning are really friendly. And that's their job. That's what they want to do, is make their city great. And so they're very open to talking about what you want to do. And they're not closed off. It's not as intimidating of a situation as I thought it would be.
That's great. So it was a match. What you wanted is something that they wanted to do. And the city has a problem, right? We all have a problem of affordability, of being able to have demand. So all of this, you can think about from that perspective when you are quote unquote pitching, that you are solving a problem. So from there, did you have to go to community?
I did. And I will tell you, that was the
hardest
part.
Did they throw eggs, tomatoes?
No. Didn't they do that to you? Didn't they do that to you or something? Like,
if they had on their hands, South Philadelphia, if they had on their hands, they would have done it.
I feel
it
like I have a memory of you telling me that you
If I was going to keep the chicken coop on top of my triplex, I was like, what chicken coop? That's how you exit to the roof. What are you talking about? Anyway. How was yours?
In this situation, it wasn't as much a problem with the community itself. I had a different one where I had that. But the problem with this one is it was January in Minnesota. Oh. And in this area of St. Paul, I had to do a radius around, it was about 30 houses that I had to get a certain percentage of signatures. Well, a lot of those houses are built where there's a porch in the front. So no one goes out into that porch in the winter. So really, in order to get their attention, I would have to enter their porch to knock on their front door, which I obviously can't do. So I had to get really creative.
What did you do?
I did an open house. I mailed letters. I mean, I did everything. And I thought I was going to have to try to get an exception from the city, which they did not want to do. And I got the last signature. But it was a lot of very cold days knocking on doors.
No, I never thought of it. I never thought about that because in South Philly, you're like, you literally have doors next to one another. So you knock it down, those signatures in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I love this, Dina. What I want to ask you though, is that there's a process that you went by, meaning there's a cost and there's a benefit to converting. And what I want to know from you is, okay, so could you have done the single family and gotten a single tenant? Or could you, you know, was that an option, even though it's too big, could you still have done it? And what was your analysis to say, no, this is worth the investment? Because quite honestly, converting is going to be an investment, right? So you're constantly weighing out this investment I have to make to do this, the city, walking around in the cold, there's a cost to that. How did you outweigh the benefit of it? And I think that's really helpful to get your thinking around that for everyone listening, because there's choices. We just don't know which one to take. And it does come back to cost and benefit. So what was some of your thinking, your way that you analyze this to kind of say, yep, this is worth it?
Yeah, for me, this house, it was an old Victorian. So this was built in the time when this was probably a really wealthy person living there. And this neighborhood now, it's a really fun kind of up and coming neighborhood, but it's just not that kind of neighborhood anymore. So I knew as a single family, it really wouldn't be profitable. So if I couldn't have, I really did think I could get it done. I'm kind of one of those, if I see it and I see that it can happen, I'm going to make it happen. But if it didn't, another exit strategy would have been, I just would have fixed it up and flipped it. Because I really don't think that it would have gotten enough rent to make it make sense there.
Tell me, what size are we talking and how many bedrooms and bathrooms?
It's about 3,000 square feet. But to start with, there was one bedroom or two bedrooms upstairs and one bathroom. And then downstairs, there was really only one giant bedroom and then one bathroom. And I ended up turning it into that main floor ended up being a three bedroom, one bath. And the upstairs is still a two bedroom, one bath.
So it's a duplex.
Yes.
So when you ran the numbers, right? And we always recommend everybody to run the numbers with three options. So you ran the numbers as a single, that did not work for rent. The numbers did work well with flipping?
Yeah, it would have been decent. It still wouldn't have been the best option, the best use of it, but it still would have been profitable.
And then the third one was to rent out, convert to a multifamily and rent it out. Tell me about like the rents compared to if you were to rent out to a single family versus what you're getting right now with a duplex.
Well, again, if I would have left it the way it was, it still would have been a three bedroom, two bath. So it really wouldn't have been that many bedrooms. And now instead it's a 3-1 and a 2-1. So in that way, it basically is double the rent, you know, maybe not quite, but pretty close.
In terms of construction, right? That's my favorite part. What were the hurdles that you had to go through? I converted once, but I don't think it was that complicated because it was at the bottom was a commercial, at the top was already two units, right? So basically I just quote unquote convert the bottom and change the structure for access, right? But for your case, what were the construction pieces that were challenging?
There were a lot with this one. It also was built in 1890. So, you know, 1890, it has a fieldstone foundation. I mean, there were a lot of things going on. We discovered many weird things. But so there was just that piece of it, just a really old house and a really old house that had not been kept up at all. I mean, there were just a lot of issues. On the back, there was a porch and they had built a second level on top of the porch. So there wasn't even foundation for it. So we thought originally I thought I was gonna have to rip it off, the whole back part, which would have two big rooms. And thankfully my contractor had the idea to call the city inspector and say, let's just have him come out and tell us what he wants to see and what's possible. And that was the best move we could have made. He was awesome. We had the best city inspector. And he came out and he looked at it and he said, you know, I think you're fine. You just have to jack it up and get a beam underneath. You know, we had to jack it up really slowly just because it's so old. But because of that, that was one bedroom I was able to make on the main level. And then upstairs, I made just this amazing sunroom.
How did you find this contractor? Because I think that's very important to talk about this. Not every contractor is a match, right? You don't want to have a very skilled contractor turning your rental around. And you also don't want your handyman doing big construction. So for the ladies that are listening, they are like, wow, I have a property that I think that could be a great thing. What they should look for when they are talking to a contractor?
So I would say, first of all, be telling everybody what you do. You know, that's a big thing. And that's how I found the contractor I was working with at that time. I just, in talking to people, telling them what I do, they said, oh, hey, do you know Dave? No, I don't know Dave. And so he is amazing. I mean, he is a master contractor. He was a master electrician, a master plumber. You know, he could literally do anything. I have not stumped him. And unfortunately, he's let his contractor's license go. But that was, you know, those were the questions, is what kind of projects have you done? What is your experience? You know, talking to other people that have worked with him. And by that point, he was like my second dad. I mean, one of our inspectors actually said, well, when you and your dad are, he's not my dad.
So, that's when you know you have a great relationship.
Did he have a crew? Did he come to the table with a team? I think that's often a red flag when you have these really amazing contractors that don't have the support that they really need. That's happened where, you know, we work with folks and they're like amazing craftsmen, if you will, but they just lack the bench, especially converting, right, a single family to a duplex, because time is money in investing. So, you know, how did you navigate that with him? How did you vet him as you start to connect with him and make sure he had the bench, if you will, to support your time frame?
Yeah, and he did. I mean, a lot of my other projects, he was able to do a lot of stuff himself. But just like you said, this was such a big one, we had to bring in a lot more subs. And he's just been doing this for so long. He had worked with many other subs and he knew which ones were good and which ones weren't. And he also is so good. He pays right away. He does all these things. So subs want to work with him. And I think that's a big thing too, is making sure that the contractor you're working with is well respected with the other people they are working with.
In terms of time frame, right? When people think about, oh, we're going to convert this, many people are like, that would take what, years or whatever the situation might be. How long did it take you from the time that you put an offer in, you closed, you got it, you know, all set? What was your time frame?
This one did. It finished in about 5 months. But the biggest problem that we had is that when it was finishing is when COVID hit. So we all of a sudden had to be calling the city and saying, is he an essential worker? Are we allowed to keep working on this? And, you know, so there were a lot of extra things we got to play around with in that situation.
One important piece that we didn't talk about, we jumped ahead, but I want to double check with you, what type of finances did you get and how were you able, because it's tricky, right? You are purchasing a property, the bank cannot finance on the multifamily because you are purchasing as a single. In my case, what I did is that I got into a contract with the seller and he started zoning before I owned it. And once I converted, I closed. We had attorneys, people getting all of this under contract to make sure it was a risk on my part, but I knew I was going to close on that property, right? It was contingent to me changing the zoning and getting the correct finance for a multifamily instead of a single. How was your experience?
That's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up. I actually had a HELOC, and exactly for the reason you said, I couldn't get a normal conventional loan if I'm changing the asset that the bank owns. You know, they're just not going to be able to approve that. And so I knew if I could buy it for cash through my HELOC, and then I, after fixing it up, then I did the cash out refi and paid back the HELOC. And that HELOC, I've done that a couple times, and I highly recommend HELOCs. Just have them sitting there. They don't cost anything.
And for those listening who are not familiar with what HELOC stands for, right? Home Equity Line of Credit. And it's such a fantastic tool in our toolbox, especially for folks that own a home has a certain value that's more than what you owe on it in a nutshell. And that you have enough room that you're borrowing against your own home, but it's a fantastic tool.
Usually you have your home, the value of your house, how much you owned, and the equity on it, many times, depending on your location, the lender, you can pull out 75% of that amount. And it stays there. If you use it, you pay for it. If you don't use it, stays there. It's a beautiful thing.
So, Dina, how much did you have in your HELOC that you put into this?
I bought it for $153,000. And then I did have to pull more from that. I ended up almost putting in as much in rehab as I did in buying it. but the place, you know, I knew it was worth it. I knew it was worth putting that much money into it and that it could hold its value. Again, it was just so inexpensive because it was in such terrible shape.
How much is the value now as a multi?
Now I think I could sell it for about $350 or $375.
Got it. So I love the step-by-step and the strategies. I want to also talk about the mindset and the structure, because in order for somebody to do a conversion, there's confidence in there. As you were saying, like, you're confident. If I see it, I know I can make that happen. So I want to go right now on the mindset piece, the behavior and the support that you have around. What have you done in order for you to feel so confident? But before we do that, let's hear a word from our sponsors.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you can make sure your ride stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, exhaust kits, turbochargers, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
All right, tell us the secret, all the holistic approach that you were able to really gain confidence to scale your business. What have you done? And it doesn't start like 5 months ago, right? It started like years and years ago. So I think it's important for us to talk about the behaviors that others can also start doing in order to gain that confidence.
Yeah. And it's a lot of different places that I get this support. You know, it started out with my husband. And he, you know, I always said he's working for our now and I'm working for our later is kind of the way that we've been doing it. So just that, knowing that my husband is behind me, I know a lot of people have that trouble. Their spouse is not really on board and that can be tricky. And then I did it myself for many years, you know, and just kind of learned on my own. I had a couple mentors here who kind of got me started. But I knew I needed more of a community to really help me see more than what I could see. And that's when I actually found you. I found you too. I was searching for, I got into a couple, you know, RIA kind of meetings. And it was a lot of guys. And that's not a bad thing. I work with a lot of men and they are amazing.
We love you guys.
Yeah. But I also wanted to be around more women, you know? And so I found your podcast and thought, wow, that's really cool that you guys had put this together. And then I did find our local meetup and started going there too. And it really has been since I got to be a part of the Strive program that you have and really just got these women around me who are just as motivated as I am to make something bigger, you know, to serve others and find a bigger way to leave something for my kids, to make a retirement and freedom for myself and my husband. And that community, like, those are my people, you know, and I'm a part of a couple other ones like that too, but it's so important to have those people. I, from that my vision has grown so much more of what I could see myself doing and what I could see possible.
One thing that Liz and I always talked about, right, is not just being part of a women's community, because you know what? We don't have freaking time for that. I want to make sure that I am surrounding myself with women that have my back. And when shit hits the fan, that they are in it, in the war with me, like go for it. Right. And that's, I think that that's what the difference is. I don't need another friend. I need women that are at this playing at the same level, because I think one thing that women are so good at is still helping others.
Yeah.
And masters at that. I can go to networking events where I keep helping others, right? And then all of a sudden my cup is empty. And who is pouring in into me? So the mindset is so important. Holistically, what have you done health-wise for your mind and body and soul?
That is one thing I'm getting better at. And that is one thing I think I've learned a lot in being in these groups. I am a driver. And so I will just drive myself into the ground to get things done. So I have found the joy in thinking time. I make myself just take time to really think about my business instead of just constantly be doing things in my business. And so that is a big part of it, is just taking breaks. I also am, I'm very careful about what I eat. You know, I try to be really healthy in what I eat. I'm getting better at working out because I know how important it is. You know, my goal for me is that I want to be a very agile and healthy 85-year-old woman. You know, I don't want to be stuck in a chair. And I know that if I'm not doing things now to get myself in that position, I can't start when I'm 65. I need to start now. So that is kind of my goal in when I'm trying to get myself to work out.
I love that. And as you say that, I'm drinking sips from my hydrogen-filled water bottle that Jessa purchased for me. We're excited about our hydrogen water. But no, my question was more about your thinking time. I say this a lot in our Strive mentorship, and I say it a lot to people. And I used to say it a lot and then not do it. You know, like, oh, you should really make thinking time. And then like I'm like, then I have it in my calendar and I blow it off. And I don't do that anymore. Not that I'm perfect, but I really need that time, that solitude time. So for everyone listening, though, it could feel a little guilty. You could feel a little like, do I need to be doing that? I need to get other things done. How do you push through that? Because that's a big one for everyone listening. How do you push through that for yourself to honor the thinking time, even though you're not kind of crossing off the tasks that you have to do, especially for the ambitious women listening? So how do you move through that guilt and do it anyway?
Yeah, that's definitely a piece of it. And I think what helps me move through that is just the experience of how I see the difference that it makes. You know, when I have made myself do that, I see the other things get done faster because I'm more focused. I know what my goals are. I know what my vision is. You know, I've taken the time to think through it instead of just reacting. So it makes those other times work so much more efficiently if I take that time to think. So that's what I have to remind myself when I'm taking that time and separating it.
How often do you do it?
Well, again, still not as much as I should, but I try to do at least 1 hour a week.
I think that we're talking about a very holistic approach of investing, right? It was not too long ago that the focus was really on get the knowledge and then action will follow. And we're really challenging that approach. And it's going to take a lot for all the women to really like embrace this holistic approach about you can get the knowledge, you have to have that. That's a given, right? But also build a sustainable business and take care of your health. In terms of your business, how were you able to build a sustainable business? What have you done that had allowed you to really step out?
Yeah, I would say there's two things, but I think the first thing that really helped me was my first property that I bought out of state was in Florida. I bought a short-term rental and I couldn't just go fix things. You know, I'm in Minnesota, it's in Florida, and I had to let that go. You know, before that, I just had that work ethic of I can fix it. I don't have to hire someone. I would show up at my houses. And that has shifted me so much that now I try to treat my properties here as if they are out of state properties.
And what does that look like to you, Dina? Like, what are the musts if you're going to treat every property, even if it's down the block, as though it's out of state? Like, what are the musts that you do to not get sucked back in?
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest things was I got a VA. So that was kind of my second part of that, helping sustain the business. And later than I should, I would suggest to people get help and outsource long before you need to. Mine was probably more of a desperation.
If you didn't, I'll be hunting her down in Minnesota.
I did. I actually found her. I went through two before, and this was just serendipitous. She's in Minnesota. She has a real estate license. So she actually now, she does all of my tenant communication. She handles anything. Like if there are issues, she has a list. I've put together a Google sheet that has all of my vendors. So she knows who to call. She knows who I want to have take care of it. She'll still check in with me sometimes, but then I'm not the one having to take all those calls from the tenant and be interrupted like that. And then I have a handyman who does a walkthrough twice a year. He has a list. He has a maintenance checklist and preventative maintenance. And also then he's my eyes on the property. He's the one in there checking. Sometimes they'll tell a handyman something they won't tell me as the owner. So they are much more open. He can kind of dig a little bit. And then he just can give me a report on what's going on.
Why did you go down the path of VA and handyman? Because you're self-managing, technically, right? Why did you go down that path versus outsourcing to a property manager?
Basically, just to continue with more cash flow. I had been doing it myself for so long. I know what needs to be done. I just don't have the time to do all the pieces. So if I can just hire kind of 1099, those little parts of it, instead of handing over the whole business, that works out much better for me in the long run from cash flow.
You know, it's a very broad approach when we look at real estate investing, right? Tell us the benefits of it, because sometimes we just focus on, oh my gosh, I need to manage a handyman. I need to manage this freaking VA. But I wanted you to share, what has that allowed you to do? How do you free up your time? And now what do you do with that time?
Yeah, that's the best part, is now I feel like my business has grown so much faster because now I have the time to work on growth things instead of working on the minutiae of just, you know, dealing with issues at a property or those kinds of things. That takes up a lot of time, you know, and just a lot of mental space. So if I can free that and hand it off to someone else, then that time and mental space is free for moving forward with the vision.
And where are you going?
I just want to keep growing. So I want to keep moving into bigger buildings. I know my next step will probably be some partnerships, which will be new for me. You know, I mean, I've been doing these all on my own, which has been wonderful. But I know to get bigger, that will be part of it. And I really have a passion for helping people understand how real estate investing can change their life. So I really have a passion for helping new people. So I've been starting to do some mentoring too with a few other people and just helping them get started in this. I made so many mistakes and I learned from those. So I love being able to give those shortcuts to people and then they can make mistakes and learn from those and help share those with other people to give them shortcuts.
Well, about the partnerships, I think I know two people that have been to the trenches that can support you with that.
Oh yeah, we'll be picking your brain. Don't you worry.
That's what I love seeing in our mentorship program in Strive, is all these different partnerships blossom and get cultivated, not because they're forced. It's not like, okay, Dina, talk to this person. And we do this like, you know, random forced, you know, networking. It's very organic. And I think that's the best way that partnerships begin. When Andres and I met, for those listening to this that aren't familiar,
1990.
Like I tell you, yeah, 1990. No, I was in middle school in 1990 wearing my Z Cavaricci's, but that's another story. No, we're getting me off my topic. No, I'm saying about partnerships is that it did begin very organically. It wasn't like we had that first coffee meeting. We're like, we're gonna take on the entire universe, and you know, we believe every woman has the birthright to become financially free. No, we became friends, and it was organic and it unfolded. And then when we got to the point of partnering, that's when it gets serious to say, okay, let's really make sure we're on the same page. And I'm not saying that's taken casually, but to get there, it is organic. And that's what I love seeing, Dina. I know you have a lot of great connections and relationships and Strive, and we're seeing those unfold. And I just think that's one of the benefits of a mentorship program, is that these women are playing at the same level. And now we want to support each other, and wow, we could actually buy some property together. Like that's just almost like another level. So I love that you've been taking action too. Like you're connecting with people, you're doing the work. It's not just like sitting back waiting for people to call you. And I think that's key to any mentorship. Do not sit back, take action.
Yeah, I agree. And it's been fun too, watching, especially all of the women that we've all been together since the beginning of Strive. It's so fun seeing how everybody is growing and how far they've come and what they're doing now. It's just so fun to think back to where we all started. It hasn't been that long, you know, I mean, it's only been a few years, but it's just incredible what the difference has made.
Awesome. Dina, where can everyone listening learn more about you and follow you on your journey?
On both Instagram and Facebook, I'm just at Dina Laugen. So it's D two E's, N-A-L-A-U-G-E-N. And then that is my website as well, dinalaugen.com. So those are the best ways.
Dina, thanks so much for coming and sharing your holistic approach. And I will see you soon at InvestorCon. At the pool. That's where we're going to hang out after all those 3 days of full day conference. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Can't wait to see you both.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to receive updates on our next interviews, go to our website, therealestateinvestor.com. There you can subscribe to our show, become part of our investor community, and get updates on upcoming episodes.
If you like our show, please share with other women who would benefit. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we encourage you to take one action as a result of today's show and put it into motion so you can live both a financially free and balanced life. Thanks for spending time with us.
Ciao.